You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
I'm sorry to tell you this, Mr. Quaid, but you've suffered a schizoid embolism. We can't snap you out of your fantasy. And I've been sent in to try to talk you down.
How much is Cohagen paying you for this?
Think about it. Your dream started in the middle of the implant procedure. Everything after that, the chases, the trip to Mars, the suite at the Hilton, are all elements of your recall holiday and ego trip. You paid to be a secret agent.
Bullshit. It's coincidence.
And what about the girl? Brunette, athletic, sleazy, and demure? Just as you specified. Is that coincidence?
She's real. I dreamt about it before I even went to recall.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 79 for the 12th of March, 2012. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
You are joined by me. How are you, Dave?
I'm great.
Awesome. That's really all I needed.
You're a lot more talkative than you were on the last show.
Well, I figured I'd change it up. It's only been, what, an hour? So may as well make it more exciting.
Fantastic. That, you know what? We got to get on the soundboard. The Old Spice guy, fantastic.
Yep.
Fun. I'm going to make that happen for next week. We're also joined by Richard Gray. How are you, Richard?
You had me. We're joined by Josh Philpott. You had me. And we're joined by Josh.
But we never put Josh in the corner.
Okay.
You don't want to see me in the corner, man. You don't want to see that happening.
How are you, Richard?
Oh, look, I'm just happy to be in such good company.
We're happy to have you too.
I had nothing else to say there.
This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And this week we are going to review the new Disney sci-fi epic, John Carter. We're also going to listen to Josh's Bargain Basement, talk about what we've been watching, and deliver a brand new list of five great movies set on another planet. Which I actually found kind of challenging after I decided to do it. I don't know about you guys. but anyway, we have our lists and we're ready to go. So let's dive straight into... Oh, actually, no, we're not going to dive straight into what we've been watching because we have to share this right now, head of the show. Quite possibly the best piece of feedback we've ever had, ever. On this show. We're going to do this right now because I'm bursting. I have to have this out in the open. Okay, so last week we published up the episode Film Actually, episode 78, which was Like Crazy and Space Battleship Yamato. You remember that, guys? Yeah?
No.
And we put it up. And as always, our show notes are on the post on the website, and you can always go there and read about our comments and so forth. And somebody has decided to put a comment on that posting. And to tell us what they thought of our opinion. And I believe we're getting a dramatic rereading of this of this piece of feedback.
We have a special guest in studio.
To give us a dramatic rereading of this piece of feedback. Can I please introduce to us Michael Caine?
Bloody got me in here for this bloody fucking thing.
Well, that's because you don't make any money anymore.
She was only 60.
So, Mr. Caine, can you please read the email, and you'll be playing tonight the character of, and I kid you not, his name is Fuck You Hacks.
Yes.
Sorry, one more time.
Sorry,
one
I broke
more
time.
His name is Fuck You Hacks.
Well, Space Battleship. It's a pathetic excuse for a movie. The excessive amount of pop music used to fund this piece of shit. The fucking model actor, the insane amount of pandering to retard weeboos is disgusting. What time did you all sell out? The fucking insanely bad pacing where it should have ended, or the space where it went for 30 fucking minutes. Fuck you. Fuck the DVD shooting off your random delusional morons out there. Who will buy your bullshit? Fuck. God. Anyone else who thinks the movie is fucking good, once again, fuck you. You fucking fuck. Fuckity fuck.
So wait. That wasn't dramatized in any way, was
no,
it?
No, no, no. This actually... is
well, except for being read by a really bad Michael Caine,
this... who seemed to be incredibly out of breath.
Now, I'd like to point out that
the broken voice. Gosh,
I'd like to point out
it's a broken voice.
The last line, if we don't read it as Michael Caine, almost gets to the point where the ranting is so much. I think his head may have actually exploded while he was writing this. I'll read it to you the way I read it. Once again, fuck you, you fuckity, fuck, fuck, fuck. All I can think is his head just went pop at that point.
I actually think he got stuck in a loop at that point. We're just running around in a circle going, fuck you, you fuckity, 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 fuckity.
So Josh, I answered on behalf of Geek, actually. And I said to him, my answer to him was very clear. And I just said, very eloquently said, now can I assume that meant you didn't like the movie?
That's it.
That's all I wrote.
Man, you are so much nicer than I ever would be. Hey, buddy, if you're listening... you're an idiot.
I really like the implication that we sold out.
I know.
Because we get so much money for this.
Yeah. Look,
not only did we sell out, but apparently our opinions of a film are overrided by him, entirely.
And we are forcing people to watch these Blu-rays and DVDs.
Yeah.
All right. That's
like, no, you're right, Josh. It's like, no, you like that movie. Fuck you. It was shit.
That's right, exactly.
That's exactly what that post says. It doesn't say I have all these issues with the film. And again, I'm sorry. Some films are funded by drinks, and some films are funded by cars. And the fact that there were pop stars involved in this somehow means that they don't get a single right to use any marketing in this film at all.
I think it is a masterful piece of feedback, and I want this man to give us feedback on every episode.
And I also admire his courage for using his real name of Fuck You Hacks, which must have been tough growing up.
Absolutely. Could you imagine
you understand why he's such a rage-filled
If you went to my school with the name Fuck You Hacks, you would have gotten the shit kicked out of you.
So my question is, I can't quite figure out the hyphenation of this word. Is his first name Fuck You or Fuck?
And no, I think it's just, that's all his first name is Fuck You Hacks.
Oh, it's Fuck You Hacks. So his last name is probably Shithead or something like that.
We're on a first name basis.
Ah, fair enough. Fair enough. Anyway, I thought we would share that with our listeners and earn our explicit tag all in one go.
Fucking, fuckity.
Have we said lately that this show is not safe for work?
It's safe for work. Just make sure you're wearing headphones.
Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely.
Or you're in a really liberal workplace.
We do very clearly carry an explicit tag on everything we do. So please be aware of that. All right. And these are not our words, by the way. This is, you can go to Geek Actually right now, look at the post from March 6th, and you can actually read this for yourself.
All right. So the poor man doesn't have a face.
I know he didn't give himself a
picture.
He's
just got a little gray head that's just like blanked out. I mean, that's, again, something he would have been living with for years.
I also have to say I feel vaguely honored because I actually went back and looked at his comment history because we actually go through discuss. We are his only comment.
So he took the time out.
Absolutely. We upset him so much he had to come and make comment on us.
He found the show, came and looked for us.
And dude, I love it. Like, doesn't that not make any sense? Because it's like he's never commented and apparently hasn't commented on anything out, and yet apparently we sell out.
Absolutely. Oh man, I loved it. All right,
you know what? I would have been so much happier if that started with something like, "Hey guys, first time, long time watcher, first time commenter."
But no, he just dove straight in. I think he kind of buried the lead.
Yeah.
he could have started off a little bit lighter, you know, a couple of other posts maybe saying, you know, we're bastards or idiots or something. But no, he dove straight in.
Yeah,
he had a John Hughes Planes, Trains, and Automobiles moment and just really lost it.
I'm quite proud of myself because you know what this means to me?
Yeah.
This means that with our review, we created an internet troll.
We are the troll masters. I love it.
Listen carefully. A troll is born. I just want to just one final thing.
Every time a bell rings, a troll is born.
One thing I want to know is what the thing is. She says, fuck the DVDs you're shooting off to random delusional morons out there.
The grammar is sensational. If I didn't,
he also said your, Y-O-U-R. There should be an apostrophe R-E.
Are you really going to correct his English after reading that thing?
No, because there is form to this. I think you need to, for someone to use fuck that many times in a single paragraph.
Yeah, well, there is that, yes.
I appreciate it. There's almost like a haiku happening in there, you know? But the last bit, once again, fuck you, you fucking fuck, fuckity fuck. That is so hard and alliterative as well.
It's magnificent. As I say, it feels like he was having a stroke at the time of writing it.
He had a stroke before he wrote it.
We may never hear from this man again. I think his head just exploded. No. So thank you very much for that. And we shall move on.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks. all right. Let's talk about what we've been watching this week. Let's start with Richard.
Oh, yeah. Look, I always come to the table with a couple of wanky art films that no one's ever heard of. Yeah. So this week, I thought I'd come to the table with Valley Girl.
Gag me with a spoon.
totally for sure.
No
which I watched.
Way.
Look, which is actually, it's dumb, but it's kind of fun. It's the first movie that Nicolas Cage used the name Nicolas Cage in. And he's hairy as all hell.
And it is the film that kind of put Deborah Foreman on the map for about 10 minutes. And she disappeared. And did I ever tell you the little anecdote that I heard? I was actually working in the Beverly Center in 1995. And the Beverly Center is like a mall at the border of Beverly Hills. And we heard, I could never confirm this, but we heard one of the other staff members came in saying that Deborah Foreman was working in one of the clothing shops downstairs.
No way.
No way.
S way. But I actually wandered around that mall for days trying to find her.
But,
spend your time doing?
Well, when you work in retail, what could it tell you?
I saw a couple of other films in the last week. I saw an ensemble piece called Margin Call, which is sort of this post-financial crisis film. It was made by Zachary Quinto's company, and he's in it. But he's in it alongside, it's a huge cast.
I was unaware that Spock had a company.
Spock has a company, apparently. It's in one of the stories. But the cast on this is okay. Kevin Spacey, Paul Bettany, Jeremy Irons, Zachary Quinto, Simon Baker, and Demi Moore, and Stanley Tucci.
What a cast!
Wow.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's in cinemas, in Australian cinemas, I think, in the next couple of weeks.
You had me at Stanley Tucci, man.
Yeah, look, he's great in it as well. Not used enough, but he's in. Like, it's got this movie's awesome, and so check that one out. It's a very David Mamet-esque character piece.
Cool.
And one other film that I wanted to mention really quickly because I have to throw in a bit of arty wank is Coriolanus.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, which is the one of Shakespeare's more obscure plays. Even more obscure than Titus Andronicus, which already has been adapted. And this is Ralph Fiennes. Directorial debut, I think.
And he's starring in it too, yeah?
So what was that?
He's starring in it too.
He's starring in it too and he produces it, but this isn't an ego film because the main character in Coriolanus is a very strange character. He's not, it's a tragedy, it's one of Shakespeare's tragedies, but this character is completely unsympathetic. There's no redeeming features and Shakespeare gives you nothing. There's no soliloquies, there's no monologues to tell you why this guy feels the way he does. He's just this bastard. And he set this in modern day warfare. So this is very much a commentary on modern politics and war. So it's a very cool film to watch. So get along and see that if you get a chance.
So what's the basics behind it?
The story is that originally it was set in ancient Rome, but he's updated it. So at the start, the people are upset because Caius, who's played by Ralph Fiennes, I keep going to call him Ralph for some reason.
Because it's spelled like Ralph. I've always thought he had the most wanky name.
Yeah, because Ralph is, and the people blame him for withholding the grain from the common people. Meanwhile, he holds, has no qualms in showing his contempt for the plebs. You know, he just hates people, and he hates the common people. And while there's these people kind of trying to soften the blow and sort of paint it as something else, he really does hate the people. And then meanwhile, he goes off and he fights in this battle where he ends up going face to face with the leader of this opposing army, who's played by Jared Butler. And because of that, he becomes a bit of a war hero, and his mother sort of convinces him to run for like this high office, and he does, and he's starting to get the people on side, but he can't hold his contempt for the populist vote in check, and soon he's kind of got this populist uprising on his hands, and he's fighting everybody, and he's in exile, and it's just really wholly unlikable character who finds that he's on the outs. And it is. It's unlike any other Shakespeare play, I think. And as a result, I think this is why it's never really been filmed. But it's I think it's a really good commentary on modern politics as a result of
this. And I just found out that Brian Cox is also in it.
Brian Cox is in it, and Jessica Chastain's in it, and Vanessa Redgrave is in it, and James Nesbitt's in it. Yeah,
I've actually been wanting to see this for a while. I've been looking at this poster. It's actually taken a while to get here, hasn't it?
Because I remember the screenings for it were like 2 weeks ago when I was away. So
yeah, but it's actually a 2011 film. It's actually taken a while to get here. The poster is really striking. It's the two faces facing each other, and they've got kind of like red markings or something on them. I'm trying to remember the poster.
And it's exactly that. I mean, I should say the screenplay was written by John Logan.
He's written some Spielberg stuff, hasn't he?
He's written a lot of stuff. He's written he's written The Aviator he wrote Gladiator. Yes, but he also wrote The Aviator, he wrote Rango, he wrote Hugo, and he's writing the screenplay for Lincoln coming up, as well as the new James Bond film, Skyfall.
He had something to do with I think he had something to do with Munich or something as well.
Possibly. He's not listed as a screenwriter on that.
No, but I'm fairly positive he had something to do. Anyway, I could be wrong. But yeah, no, he's actually a really good writer. He's been around for a while. So.
We should probably get moving.
Okay.
Just saying.
We could do that. anything else?
Film.
Fair enough.
I've got heaps, but we got to get moving.
We've got to get moving, apparently, so we better get moving. All right. This week I rewatched Showgirls.
Did buy it up.
Oh yes, how could I not? Come on.
I was in a JB Hi-Fi with David, and we went to a bargain bin, and the first thing he picked up was Showgirls.
Basically got it for free, because you buy two you get one free, so I thought that's got to be the free one. It is absolute camp garbage, but that film is so funny.
I love it.
It is so bitchily funny in many ways, and it unintentionally, completely. I mean, this is a film that Paul Verhoeven was trying to make something serious, but I gotta say, it still will go down in it's legendary. That sex scene in the hot tub is the most awkward thing ever filmed.
it's like she's having an epileptic fit, and he's been paralyzed with fear.
The look on his face, he does not know what to do. It is just tragic. It really is. I also rewatched The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which I also picked up on Blu-ray, which looks great on Blu-ray, by the way. This is a film that we actually reviewed quite positively, Josh, and it does. It holds up quite well. It's a lot
of soft spot for that film. Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. It's not a masterpiece, but it is a lot of, and it's actually one of the better things that Cage has done of late.
Yeah.
He's having a lot of fun with it, playing that wizard sorcerer boss, and he's a lot of fun. It's good. It's good. But the true star of that film, though, will still go down to, and his name is just shot out of my head. Help me out, Dr. Octopus?
Alfred Molina.
Alfred Molina, thank you. The true star of that film is still Alfred Molina. As the bad guy. He is awesome.
As he was in Prince of Persia.
Absolutely. The man who can make any B-roll better than the star. all right, Josh, what you been watching?
Well, of course, we've got my weekly opinion. We've got my bargain basement coming up. But before that, I just want to say that we sat down and watched Munich. Celine hadn't seen it.
What did you think
of it?
And
I wanted to rewatch it. I got the same feeling I did last time, which is neither... excuse me, bad or good. The thing about it is I actually think it's a really well done film, but it's not hard to watch. It's really crushing to watch. It's a very depressing film.
It is.
And I left it the same way I left the first one, which was thinking about it a little bit, but also thinking about how much I miss thinking about positive things.
I actually really liked Munich. I saw it at the cinema and I've seen it several times since. I actually think it's a really well put together film. And actually, probably I'm going to say my favorite Eric Bana performance.
I don't think
he's actually ever been better than that. Because he actually really sold that character for me. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought that was Spielberg in really good form. I don't know. Richard, what did you think of Munich?
Yeah, look, I was never a big fan of Munich, but I think I'm sort of more like Josh. I didn't hate it, but I certainly thought it had enough faults for me to not love it. I found the subject matter interesting enough, but I found the execution a bit flat.
That's interesting. I actually remember the Munich massacre. I was old enough to actually remember seeing all that on the news when it was actually happening. And so I guess in some ways, it took me back to that time. I was very young at the time. And it's really interesting because it is a fabrication. We don't know what happened after that. You know what I mean? This is basically a revenge tale, which is what we think happened and so forth, but we really don't know. The Israelis have never actually come out and said, yes, this is what we did. You know what I mean? But it's kind of one of those situations where you look at it and go, you kind of wanted them to, though. Because <You know? laughs> it was kind of like, it was a horrible thing to do.
Yeah, no.
It was the Munich massacre was horrible. And it's kind of this, it's almost wish fulfillment, that film. It's a little bit like Inglourious Basterds when you think about it. That film is wish fulfillment as well.
Yeah.
I think that by the end of the film, you really get that sense, though, that the main thing about that film is that bloodshed doesn't fix anything.
Exactly.
And I mean, they get that across well. Like it's not like Bastards, where it's like at the end of it, it's kind of almost being like, well, they did it. Hooray. It's like with this, they truly point out the fact that violence is pointless. It doesn't solve anything.
Munich is saying violence is pointless and Inglourious Basterds is glorifying that violence. So they're coming at it from two different points. I will say, though, that there are moments in Munich which are Spielberg genius. That scene with the phone.
Mary Josie Crowes is naked, for example.
Well, I was actually thinking more like the scene with the phone and the bomb in the phone and the little girl. That scene is so...
I just like her. She's a Canadian actress. No digger.
All right, we're gonna be talking about girls coming up soon. All right, we'll come back to girls in a minute.
I just had to introduce boobs at this early stage.
Fair enough. They can always introduce boobs. I have no problem with that. Yeah. Josh, are you ready?
All right, yes.
Oh, do you have one more serious one before I do this?
That's it. Let's do it.
All right.
Good evening, and welcome to Josh's Bargain Basement.
Man, that was super bassy, that one. Thank you, Dave. Thank you for the lead-in.
You're welcome.
This week, I am very broke, which means that I didn't go out and get something from the bargain bin. I went into my collection of bargain bin films and brought one forward to talk about because I managed to sit down and watch it. Now, there may be some confusion for long-term listeners because you may think I've actually already talked about this. We are talking this week about Urban Legend. Yes, Urban Legend. Urban Legend.
I don't believe it. I believe it's just a legend.
Yeah, it happened, Dave, and I know it because I have it. In fact, I have all three. And I sat down and I still haven't seen two, and two's going to be next week's because after watching one, I have to see what they did with this thing. Because last time when I was talking to everybody about watching the Urban Legends, I had actually only seen three because I had already seen the first one. So Celine sat down and watched that one alone. I missed two because she watched them both back to back. But I watched three, which was wonderful. It was basically an anti-drug drug tale that had absolutely no grounding or direction or any camera skills or probably any cameras at all. I would imagine this was shot on phones. It was that bad. Now, coming, of course, rewinding back, we go to the first film. And I don't know why, but I had positive memories of this film mentally, or at least I thought I did. And I sat down and I was like, I like this film. I like this film. It was great. And I went, I started watching it with Celine's voice as she left the house saying, man, that is such a shit film. And I was like, no, it wasn't. It wasn't that bad. And then I started watching it and I got like 30 minutes into it and I was like, oh, that's right. No, this was really bad. And I sat down and watched the whole thing. And man, that is a tragic film. It's like every single actor playing themselves, but playing them in a horror film. And all the time that this film is going on, there are red herrings everywhere and there is terrible reasons for it's like someone sat down and went, what's, you know what we should do? We should make a film in the caliber of like Jason 6. We should just make a film like that. And that's what they've tried to do here. They've tried to make a film that has a bad premise to start with and tried to play it straight, like 100% straight. And I actually wonder whether or not it was supposed to be that way. Because, I mean, there's little things that made me laugh. Like, as an example, when Josh, whatever his name is, from Dawson's Creek gets in the car at one stage and starts up the car, the stereo blares very loudly, "I Don't Want to Wait," which is, of course, the intro theme to Dawson's Creek, which I thought was really funny. But then, you know, there was the rest of the film, and that was all crap. So there's nothing positive to say about this film, and if you're like me and ever thought perhaps it wasn't that bad a film, I've just saved you the trouble. It is that bad.
It came out in an era when everybody was trying to make Scream. They were all trying to make horror films that had humor. Yep. And what they didn't seem to realize was that Scream was kind of unique in the fact that the writer and the director, who they were, and basically, and they brought that to the screen. Everybody else just didn't get the same message. You know, the one thing I do remember about Urban Legends, I remember very little about Urban Legend 1. What I do remember is that there's a girl in it with a big mane of frizzy hair and like a square face.
Oh yeah, you mean the one that did that film and then like disappeared?
I think so. Yeah.
I know. I remember thinking. Yeah, she's crazy looking. She had the best crazy eyes though. I was watching her in the last few scenes.
Yeah, no, she was psycho looking. She was. And I remember that.
It was a little bit too much crazy. The kind of crazy where you're wondering whether perhaps it extended offset.
Who was that? Does anybody know who that actress was?
I don't know. You know, Richard's usually the quickest on this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I can't be bothered.
He doesn't care.
Yeah, fair enough.
Oh, wait a minute. I have it. Her name is Rebecca Gayhart. There we go.
Oh, it's Rebecca Gayhart.
Yeah. And she doesn't look like that. If you look at her IMDb profile, she doesn't look like that anymore.
Oh, it's Rebecca. Yeah, I know Rebecca Gayhart. I don't know her personally.
Anyway, we've spent enough time talking about this film. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It was crap.
I think we should do the whole show on this film.
I think so.
Right? Done.
I don't see why not. I'm just.
I've got the most to talk about with it.
Well, yes. Yeah, I mean, I've not seen it in 10 years.
I haven't seen it since 1998, so it could be and all I can remember is a girl with frizzy hair. Right? So I'm probably not the right one to talk to. Now, I actually remember really not liking it very much, though. That's really what it comes. That's what I really remember is not liking it very much.
Well, all I'm going to say is, yeah, it's there. All right. And it's crap.
Fair enough. Let's move into a feature film review. What do you reckon?
Yeah,
this
sure.
week we are going to be reviewing John Carter. Now, according to IMDb, it says, transplanted to Mars, a Civil War vet discovers a lush planet inhabited by 12-foot-tall barbarians. Finding himself a prisoner of these creatures, he escapes only to encounter a princess who is in desperate need of a savior. And it's directed by Andrew Stanton, who is actually a Pixar alumni. And this is his, from memory, this is his first live-action film, yes?
It is.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is also written by Andrew Stanton. It is written by Mark Adams. And there are two more. One of them, of course, is based on the book by Edgar Rice Burroughs. And it's also written by Michael Chabon. Or Chabon?
Yes.
Chabon or Chabon?
Chabon. Yeah, no, he's quite a famous writer.
Yeah. Michael. This film stars Taylor Kitsch. Kitsch. I'm sorry, I have problems with that name. Lynn Collins, Samantha Morton, Willem Dafoe. Most of these people are actually supplying voices. Thomas Hayden Church, Mark Strong is in this film. We were all fans of Mark Strong. Kieran Hines, Dominic West, Bryan Cranston, who seems to be turning up in everything at the moment. Is there a film out this summer that Bryan Cranston is not in? That's the question. I think we should have every film starring Bryan Cranston and directed by Guillermo del Toro. all right. So this film has had a long and sordid and checkered history as well. This was a film that was originally, a while back, was attached to Robert Rodriguez, and when it was actually called Princess of Mars. You were telling me that it was attached to who?
Jon Favreau at one point, and I think that was when it was Paramount.
Right.
And he eventually got bored of waiting and went on to, you know, Iron Man, Cowboys and Alien.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, and I'm sure if you go through its history, Guillermo del Toro was probably attached to it at some point as well, because he's attached to everything in Hollywood. Let's have a look at this trailer. I've actually got the trailer too, which is actually the shorter trailer. We'll have a quick look at this, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about what we thought of John Carter.
Who is that?
World is under attack, John Carter.
That don't look like a fair fight.
And Earth is next. Will you stay, fight for us?
Get on.
John Carter fights for us.
Soon we will seal the fate of this world. This might get dangerous.
I did not cause this. But I will end it!
Nothing must stand in our way. Let's see what he's capable of. In IMAX 3D, March 9th.
Or in our case, March, whatever it is.
Eight.
Sorry?
Eight.
Eight, there you go. All right, so we're going to let Josh go first, I believe. Now, before you go, Josh, we will just say that on our film actually news show that we recorded earlier today, and actually will already be out by the time you hear this, we already did talk a little bit about the shameful, basically, behavior of a lot of critics out there who basically doomed this film to obscurity before it actually came out. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go back and look it over all the press, and you'll basically see they were all declaring this film dead before it even got a chance to open. We already ranted about this, saying that we thought it was kind of shameful behavior, because realistically, give a film a chance to open and then make an opinion. Don't prejudge it completely.
And that doesn't get us wrong. I mean, it's not about bad reviews of the film, because, I mean, that's just, you know, that's any film. There's going to be good reviews and bad reviews. This was people, you know, telecasting its doom before a frame of footage.
And we even covered it in last week's show when we were talking about the fact that there were all those, all that tracking information that was coming out from America, where they were basically saying, oh, it's not tracking well. And it's like, do you know what?
Yeah.
It means nothing. Just go see the movie and then make up an opinion. You know, write a review. Let's not just speculate about
which
everything.
Which we're about to do.
Now, what we're going to do is talk about the film, because we've all seen it, and let's actually talk about the film. So, Josh, what did you think of John Carter?
Well, John Carter's an interesting film, because I read the reviews, and I did this mainly because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't on the anti-hype machine. That's right, I said anti-hype machine, because there is both sides of the coin. There is the people that will naturally jump on something that is universally being slammed and be like, I actually really like it. And I, you know, don't, I never tend to be that person, but it's like, I seem to get a very different impression than all of these reviews I'm reading. And the problem that I have is that I understand some of them. One of the most interesting comments I saw leveled at this film was that it was hollow. And I can kind of, that would be the one that I kind of grabbed onto and went, oh, all right, I can kind of see where they're going with that. I'm not saying that it's without any substance or anything like that, but it's a bit flowery. There's not much real soul-clenching depth to this film or something. And then I stopped myself and went, it's a fucking Disney film, for starters. And second of all, it's a sci-fi epic. And I would like to go as far as to say, anyone that really hates this film, break down for me why it's so bad, because anyone that I've spoken to doesn't seem to be able to give me a decent reason for why it was so bad. Like, that film was terrible.
Interject for 1 second, Josh, and also say that not only is it a Disney film, it's an Edgar Rice Burroughs novel. Yep. I mean, this is the man who brought us Tarzan. You know what I mean? Exactly. It's like, this is an old-fashioned adventure film.
Yeah.
You know, that's really what it comes down to. It's an old-fashioned adventure film. And in that sense, they actually kind of nailed it.
Yeah, look, I mean, they still left it. They could have added more depth, or perhaps gave his character a little bit more scenes where it kind of, you know, sort of gave him a bit more substance, because the scenes where he was kind of explaining himself out and sort of doing his heartfelt moments, I wasn't really connected as such. But there's so much happening in this film, and it's the kind of film that I don't really think needs to over-explain itself, because you're filling it with everything else that you see. You know, you've got giant aliens, you've got massive space battles and colosseums, you've got a man that can leap miles into the air and can basically do more damage than any other being on the planet, literally because of bone structure. It's like, this isn't a film that needs to be analyzed down to the nitty gritty. I mean, like, what did you come to see?
Exactly.
Yeah. Here.
No, but seriously, like, you've seen the trailers. You knew that the trailers were going to give you a, you know, relatively soulless, fun action film that connects that fine line between, you know, sort of late young people, teenagers, and the adult child in all of us, and basically go out and throw a sci-fi film that just takes you to a place like nothing you've ever seen, and takes you into a world where it's just pure adventure, like nothing else. And if you'd liked Indiana Jones and you say that you don't like this film, I think you really need to sit down and see why you liked Indiana Jones, because I think they are quite, like, somebody described it as Indiana Jones in space. And I kind of get what they mean. Yeah, I know he's not the, you know, hat wearing, you know, whip slaying adventurer, It's that same kind of feeling. It's that concept that you've got a character who you know a little bit about, but really not that much. And essentially it's him being put in a fish out of water situation and just thrown to the wind and just fuck it, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I thought it was freaking great. It was just fun, and I was never bored. There was never a dull moment. There was plenty of stuff going on. The visuals are just stunning, eye-wateringly good. And I saw this at IMAX, and it was just an absolute spectacle to sit down and watch. Guys, what did you think?
Richard, what do you want?
Yeah, look, I'm absolutely with Josh on this. I'm baffled at the negative reviews, because I agree with exactly what you said. It's just, what were you expecting? Was my first reaction. It's kind of the Cowboys and Aliens scenario. It's kind of like, there was a movie called Cowboys and Aliens, and people came out of it going, well, it seemed like a Western crossed with a sci-fi film. I didn't know what was going on. It's like, it was in the title, people. This is, you know, admittedly, the marketing of this has been odd, but we got exactly what was on the box. You know, it is an excellent swashbuckling adventure in the style of the guy who wrote Tarzan. It doesn't need to do a lot of setup. It doesn't need to have a lot of depth. Sometimes movies just need to be fun, and this is exactly what John Carter is. And you know, once you get the setup happening, once you're on Mars or Barsoom, it just ticks along. I mean, he is, admittedly, you know, as you said already, Josh, you know, his character could have been fleshed out more in some places. You know, we could have gone, but this is, let's not forget, this is based on like 11 novels or something originally. There's time to come back to John Carter. There's time to give him more.
And if they gave him more time, and if they'd given him more respect, he would have made more money, and we would have got more of these to flesh it out. Yeah,
exactly. This is an origin story. Now, one of the things that a lot of people are going to compare it to, and certainly Disney tried to head this off in their marketing, which was, you know, people are going to compare it to everything from Avatar to Star Wars and so forth. Now, of course, yes, and with the Thales, there's certainly a Na'vi parallel there, but lest we forget, this book was written in 1912, you know, couple of years before James Cameron found out about 3D.
Yeah, and you know what, and I'm going to forgive them the whole idea that he jumps and he's strong because of bone density, because it's 1912 science.
Exactly.
You know, we also have to come to terms with the fact that there is stuff living on Mars.
Yeah, absolutely right. This
the
is
planet
science
that we've seen, you know, through telescopes for thousands of
exactly.
thousands of years.
Yeah. I mean, this is science fiction, and people often forget that with that there's an element of fiction, and that not all fiction has to be logical and make sense and have character depth and arc. And I mean, like, you know, you do have to have a structured narrative in the middle of this, which it does. It's got a very classic structured narrative, but you shouldn't hold that against it. I think that, you know, this is, to me, one of the first great kind of epic swashbuckling sci-fi adventures we've had this decade. I know the decade's only short, but this just shows you how few of these we get these days. And you're right, Josh. It's like the classic stuff. It's like Indiana. You know, I got the same feeling from it when I went and saw Indiana Jones, or the same feeling that I got when I went and saw those films. I just came out and had fun, and I kind of wanted to go on the ride again, you know?
Can I just go on a different tangent for things? And because I really want to try and assault the senses of these people that just think this film is so bad, and just say, did you enjoy Pirates of the Caribbean? Because what the fuck is wrong with you if you look at this and go, psh, that was silly? It's like, you just watched a film involving giant sea creatures and pirates and the undead, and yet that's okay.
So you think this would have done better if Johnny Depp had played John Carter?
Of course it fucking would, because everybody would have gone and seen it.
And that actually brings me to my point, because I think I love this film. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was actually, I don't think it's a masterpiece, but I thought it was a lot of fun, and I had a lot of fun watching it. And I came away, you know, I said to Katie when I got home, I said, you know, that was just, it was an enjoyable adventure film. The problem I had with the film was Taylor Kitsch. Because I actually don't think he's strong enough, and that's the problem. I just don't like him very much. I think he's a pretty boy, and that's fine, and they obviously wanted his looks for John Carter. I just don't think he's strong enough for leading man material. And I actually kind of felt the same way when I saw, sorry, Josh, I know I'm going to have to mention this, but two of the cast members are from it. He was also in Wolverine as Gambit, and he wasn't very strong in that either. You know, and I'm not quite sure why they're grooming him for stardom. And I think if you'd had another actor in the lead who could have really sold Carter, I think we would have solved a lot of problems.
Maybe. I actually think he did okay, though.
He did.
Don't
get me wrong. He did okay, because I still enjoyed the film. But I just think all the way through it, I'm thinking, who else would I have put in John Carter's role? Because everybody else in the cast I was fine with.
But that's the thing. If you the problem with something like John Carter is that because he is the central figure, if you cast someone too big, it's no longer John Carter. It's you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And
you know,
maybe the answer is to do the Superman thing and cast an unknown.
Exactly. Well, Taylor Kitsch was almost an unknown.
But he had some profile.
Yeah, I know, but who really knows Taylor Kitsch?
Who really knows?
I agree, man. Like, no one I knew. Everyone's response when I said, you want to come see John Carter, because they were staring at the tickets things, were, who's that guy on the front? Like, it's Taylor Kitsch, and they'd be like, who's that? So
now,
it's like, he's not a universally well-known person, man.
Now, on the flip side of this, when I went to go see Dances with Avatar on Mars, I really, really liked Lynn Collins as the princess. I really liked her as Deja. And I, all the way through the film, I sat there watching it going, where do I know her from?
Yeah.
Because she looks so familiar to me. And of course, she was Wolverine's girlfriend in Wolverine. We have two actors from Wolverine in this film. Sorry, Josh.
I actually found her a weaker link than him. Because she was so darn fun to look at. she was nice to look at. The same thing that you said about Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah, but I don't want to look at Taylor Kitsch. I want to look at
her. But I mean, you know, they're obviously playing for both demographics.
Absolutely.
There.
No, I understand that completely.
But the problem was that with her, I found that she was like every princess from every film we've ever seen.
She was a generic Edgar Rice Burroughs princess.
Absolutely. But, and, you know, I did find, I think that's the one thing. While I don't think that they should necessarily have to update everything in every film to make it a, you know, about, you know, a modern woman who, they did kind of try and do that with her. She was, you know, a scientist in her own right.
Yeah, and I'll make you a bet in the book she never wielded a sword.
No, probably not. And they made her much tougher, but I think that she was a fairly lightweight character for, and there wasn't enough there between the two of them for him to have this kind of, well, I'm going to give it all up and stay on Mars kind of.
And the problem I also had with the John Carter character was there were times when they're asking him questions, and I'm sure it's in the book as well, where he's being really stoic and not saying anything. And all I could think is, if you would just open your mouth and speak, a lot of problems would actually be solved.
Yeah. But I think at the end of the day, that's far too much detail than this film needs, you know. And I think, you know, Edgar Rice Burroughs purists are going to complain about some of the dramatic liberties that, that Disney's probably taken with the material. We've just mentioned a few of them. But I still think at the end of the day, there's a lot of respect for the books and a lot of respect for, in particular, Princess of Mars, which is largely based on. Mm. He uses that, which we'll probably get into in our spoilers section. He uses a little framing technique to set this, you know, in that sort of 19th century and then moves on. It's just a big, grand, traditional Conan, Flash Gordon-y camp classic kind of thing. And I just love that stuff, you know?
You know what's funny, man? This is going to be one of those films, I reckon, that in 5 years' time will be in a lot of people's DVD cabinets and everybody will look back on it fondly, but it will have missed its first thing. This is basically probably going to end up like Tron again. Like, yeah, this is another one of Disney's marketing, you know, bad lucks. Well, I'm bad luck. We can argue to the cows come home who's responsible for it. But the point is that it's one of those things where it's like it comes out, people see the Disney logo. They're like, it's not going to be a Star Wars-esque film. It's going to be silly and kid and campy. And guys, if anybody's listening to this and sitting on the fence, it's nothing like that. Creatures get cut in half. Like, violence is all over this film.
It's, you know, it's in the same kind of league, age-wise and you know, demographic-wise, as everybody who went to see the Pirates of the Caribbean films. It's that Disney. Yeah. It's not Disney who's making, you know, Race to Witch Mountain and stuff like that. This is their more adult Disney. Disney should have, by now, we should have shaken the stigma. We've had too many blockbusters come out of Disney over the last decade to basically say, oh, it's just a Disney film.
I think for a lot of people, Disney's always going to be the House of Mouse. It's never going to shake that. And yet, for the longest time,
Pirates of the Caribbean 2 almost took $1 billion. People are going to see it.
But until Eisner, no one really saw Disney as anything. It was such a tightly controlled kids brand.
Yeah.
Until Eisner, like the old guard, rebelled against it. But until then, you know, they wouldn't even want to let, you know, having a slide. Like, to give you an example, this is a really quick example. Tinkerbell is now all over T-shirts and she's looking a little coquettish, you know, the shirts. Roy Disney rebelled against that, marketing those kids. He said, oh, you've turned Tinkerbell into a slut just because she's winking at camera.
Yeah.
Now, that's how tightly marketed Disney product was before they started moving into the Touchstone stuff, before they started moving into stuff like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And so, you know, it's hard to overcome 70 years of that.
And the thing is, Touchstone was created, Touchstone and Hollywood Pictures, who were both giant labels in...
And Dimension
in the 80s and 90s, were created so that they didn't have to carry the Disney logo. They were Disney productions that didn't have to carry the Disney logo. And it worked. I mean, people would go to Touchstone Films and pay millions of dollars for movies. Look at some of those films that came out in that period of time, and you sit there and go, that's because they didn't have the stigma of the mouse. And it was only recently, realistically, we're looking at Pirates of the Caribbean 1 that kind of went, you know what, we're going to put this under the mouse label. Because let's face it, if Pirates of the Caribbean and John Carter had come out 2 decades ago, they would have been Touchstone Films. You know, and it's like I thought we were over that stigma by now, but it seems not.
Yeah,
I just think it's just one of those things where the press has decided that this is the one that they're going to pick on this year.
Thank God and it wasn't the Avengers.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I'm
still
surprised.
Time for that.
So the people have sort of stayed away. I think we talked about this in the other show that people haven't really spoken about Hunger Games much because I don't think anybody wanted that to be the first disappointment of the year. So they've decided to pick on this instead. That's me being cynical, perhaps, but I think it's actually a film.
I don't think it's you being cynical. I think it's you being realistic, man. I think that's exactly what the case is. I mean, everybody's looking at Hunger Games and going, we don't want to have a Twilight thing on our hands again, where essentially they poo-poo a film and everyone likes it and they feel stupid about themselves. I thought that if that's the way you're going to think, Hunger Games has a 50-50 chance with me, and it's not necessarily going to win. You know, and you were saying?
No, keep going.
No, go.
Yeah, I was just saying that it's so interesting because it's like we've got to a thing where it's almost like the older writers on these sites and stuff like this are looking at it and going, Well, it's based on a famous teen book. Maybe I should leave it alone. But it's like John Carter's like, well, it's got a stupid name and they haven't marketed it well, so it's going to do terribly. And then it does, and they're like, yeah, well, it's probably good because it was a shit film. And they may
it's
not
that,
have
it's
even
that
seen
it.
It's
that whole culture mentality. Yeah. Like the Deadline does, you know, it's kind of like as long as we can come back to you in a couple of weeks and go, yep, we called it first. It's that whole mentality with the internet.
And if they're wrong, they just ignore it.
Exactly. Yep. Right. I mean, look, you know, we're part of it. We're part of the machine. We're part of the online reporter circle. That's what we do. We comment on films, we report stuff, and then we come back and follow it up later. But I still do feel as though, unfortunately, this has been the victim of an almost systematic
assassination.
Yeah, actually, there's no other word for it.
Cool.
It was an assassination. Yeah. This film was assassinated. It had the target on it all the way through production, all the way up to its release, and they pulled the trigger. You know, and they literally shot this thing in the head before it had a chance to do anything. Boy, we're a bunch of bitter critics today.
But I think rightly so in this case.
I think this is a case where the film undeservedly got mistreated, and we've seen it, and we can actually say, let's give a round of reviews, and I'm just going to say that I highly recommend this. Go out and have a look at it. If you just want a fun Saturday night, this is the film to go have a look at. At the moment, this is the film to go have a look at. Richard?
Absolutely. Highly recommended for me, too. I think it's fun, great modern retelling. You know, updating a 100-year-old book for modern audiences with, as Josh has already said, mind-blowing special effects.
Oh, yeah, so. I didn't even get a chance to respond to that. Fantastic visuals. I mean, God, I know you can see because Stanton is, as I've said, is an alumni of Pixar. You know Pixar's hand is in those green aliens. You know they've come in and they've helped out because they are sensational. And I got to say, quite frankly, better than Avatar.
Effectively, Stanton was quote-unquote on loan to Disney for this because he is, you know, Pixar's director.
Yeah.
And he brought a few of his crew over and they were careful to say that this was a Disney film, not a Pixar film.
Yeah, and if you notice in the credits, Pixar's only been given a thank you. It hasn't got a full credit. But he dedicated the film to Steve Jobs.
Yeah, well.
So, and because Steve Jobs owned Pixar. So there's a lot of connections there. Josh, round us off.
I'd like to say that this film is really, really good. And though there is some problems with it, like there is with a lot of films, including Star Wars. There, I said it.
When you're right, you're right, Josh.
Yeah, agree.
Exactly. And if you're going to attack a film like this as harshly as the world is, then then I will remember it next time a film comes along which isn't that great that you all jump on.
Yeah,
it's like Hunger realistically, Games. Look, I think it's really good. I think that there's no valid reasons to say that it's terrible. And I think if you didn't like it, that's fine, but stop beating on this film like it's the worst thing that came out this year because it's far from it.
And I think we can all agree.
It's only March.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we can all agree that it's not a masterpiece of a film. We're not talking about a film that is, there's nothing wrong with it, but it is a film that is just a lot of fun. And it's just a really enjoyable film. It's what Prince of Persia wanted to be.
Exactly.
And it didn't quite get there. We are going to do a quick spoiler section for this because I'm sure we want to talk about a few things. Richard, do you have your sound?
I certainly do. So play a thing. Let's open the spoiler vault.
What happened?
You misfired.
The door got stuck.
Would you like to try that again?
Oh. It's not going.
All right, that's wrong. Spoilers interrupt us. That'll do. Let's move on. I don't know what the hell.
It's broken.
I don't know what the hell's going on your side of town. All right, from this point onwards, we're in spoilers as usual. We'll put the show notes. We'll put the time code so that you can actually bail out and fast forward this bit if you haven't seen John Carter. All right, I want to talk a little bit about the jumping, please. I found that the leaping in it was just a little bit overblown. I can't be any more frank than that. I think it was a plot device that they needed. It's from the book. It's the concept of the bone structure. But really, it got to a point where he was like doing Incredible Hulk leaps.
That's because
can you imagine
amazing.
What an Incredible Hulk leap would be like?
Would it be green? That's the question. And the other thing I want to talk about very quickly in the book, in the spoiler section, was what Richard was talking about, which was the bookends. I thought that was very clever. I think it was actually too clever for the film, unfortunately. Which was
almost a different film, actually.
Well, it was. I was actually thinking more though that the title of the film.
Because
we start the film as a film being called just John Carter.
That's right.
And we end the film with John Carter of Mars,
which is what was originally marketed as.
Absolutely. And I like the fact that I think it's very clever that they've said he's now John Carter of Mars. We've kind of moved to that. But I think the film should have just been called John Carter of Mars from the beginning.
I agree.
And I think that might have actually helped the film. I think the title of this film may have actually hurt it.
Well, I think, what was that other, Mission to Mars was the other unsuccessful Disney movie that came out that was their other unsuccessful.
That was Disney too, wasn't it? That was in a dimension, wasn't it?
It was Disney film and it was based on one of their rides. This is one of the early attempts to make a ride-based film. There's a few ones that they don't talk about. Pirates of the Caribbean was a success. Haunted Mansion was not. But there was also a ride-based film for Mission to Mars, which is in Disney World.
I had no idea that was based on a ride.
There's also a Tower of Terror film with Steve Guttenberg and Kirsten Dunst. that was direct to DVD, that one. It was a TV movie, I think, as well. I think Disney was scared off by using Mars in the title again.
I think they should have stuck by that. I think calling it just John Carter kind of didn't tell anybody what it was. If they'd said John Carter Mars, we would have known it was sci-fi.
Absolutely. But that's the thing. I think they got scared that people would think it was sci-fi, but then people got confused because they didn't realize it was sci-fi and all those sorts of things happened. You know?
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's talk about I think it was a really good choice actually setting this in period.
Absolutely.
I think that was actually really, really strong, actually, especially that whole opening sequence. I love that opening sequence with him punching that guy.
In fact, yes. It's such a strong sequence. Disney actually released that first 10 minutes online ahead of the film coming out. And unfortunately, they sort of probably gave people another impression about the film that it was a period.
Yeah, see, I would have released 10 minutes of the Mars stuff. I don't think I would have released the period stuff. But that sequence where he keeps basically trying to get away.
I love the fact that the second time where they've got him chained up and he starts talking and he leapt out the window. That was the best. Yes. Like I rolled around on the floor for that bit. It was great. It was just like that is the best way to piss take the whole speech giving thing that you do in films, where it's just like wee and he's out the window.
It was a really well edited, really cut sequence, and the whole thing was just really. And I think it was sort of a really early signal that the whole film was going to be so cut together so well.
It set the tone. It was actually and that was what was so good about it. Was it set the tone? We also set that mystery of him walking down the street and there's that person following him, and we knew there was some kind of mystery happening here. And I think the opening sequences all the way up to where he actually transports to Mars is very solid.
Yeah, I agree.
And I even like the conceit. I even like the way they got him to Mars. Because I was actually all the way through that opening scene, I'm going, how are we going to get him there?
Yeah.
Logically, how are we going to get him? And I think they actually pulled that off. I think they made sense of that.
Yeah, no, I really like that motif, and I really like how they wrapped that up at the end and sort of gave that the possibility of, you know, sequel fodder as well as spin-offs and all sorts of things there. And you know, look, I like that much just as much as the stuff on Mars, sometimes even more so.
Now, can I also ask your opinions, though? How much time has passed? Because if you remember, he goes to Mars, he's not there that long. When he comes back, he's all stiff and he's covered in dust and the other guy's turned into a skeleton. So he's obviously been gone a long time.
He's gone at least a few months.
A few months.
But then, again, time moves differently in Narnia than it does on... Oh, no, sorry.
Well, my point was that he was then on Earth for like 10 years trying to find his way back.
Yeah.
So when he finally gets his way back, is she like, you know, a shriveled old woman?
I don't know.
Well, we'll find out when the sequel comes out. Ah! I'm just kidding.
You're living in a dream world, aren't you? Or is it?
Are following it up. Disney are following it up with comics, so we'll probably read it in comic form.
As long as they're better than that thing we read. God.
Oh yeah. What was that? John Carter gag me with a bassoon.
That's the one.
No, Warlords of Mars gag me with a baboon.
The wall of bassoons. Yeah. You go listen to Behind the Panels. We actually did a John Carter book, which was not good. Very bad. Josh, you got anything?
No, that's it.
No? Okay. Richard, you got any more?
I don't want to wreck anything.
Richard?
Hello. Oh, sorry. I've got a pencil.
Okay. Yep. Fair enough. By the way, speaking of pencils.
Yeah.
Did anybody ever enter your competition to get the IKEA pencil?
No, I haven't heard from anybody. Look, the official stance, I've still got the IKEA pencil. If you'd like to enter it, I'm just going to say email it to, what's your email address, David?
No, we were doing it to your Twitter account.
Okay, that's right. Just tweet me at DVDBits and say, I want the IKEA pencil because, and that's it.
And Richard will pick a random winner.
And I'll pick a random winner.
And you have to live in Australia. Sorry.
You have to live in Australia. It's a slightly used IKEA pencil.
I don't even know how that started now. I can't even remember. Anyway, take us out of the spoiler zone if you have nothing more to add.
Well, I'll see if it works this time.
Okay, try it out. I didn't hear a door.
The door didn't work.
The door is not working. Oh, there it is.
Something is wrong with the soundboard.
The spoiler vault.
Hang on, let me just try this.
Okay, that's working fine. That's working fine. It just doesn't like your door. Yeah. We'll see if we can work on that for future shows. What do you think? all right. Let's do our list of five guests. Boy, this show's running a little bit long as well. Boy, we're undisciplined this week. What can I tell you? Our list of five this week is five great films set on another planet. I wonder what inspired that list. All right, so let's start with. Oh, do you know I kept
Urban Legend?
It wants to be on another planet. Do you know how I kept all this in order last week? I actually wrote it down as I was going. How's that?
Right.
But you know what? I don't have a pen this week, so we're going to be out of control. Okay, everything else in this show is out of control. What would make this any different? Let's start with Josh. What's your number five?
My number five is Total Recall.
Oh, okay, cool. That's
yep. Total Recall, jumping straight to Mars. Yep, straight to Mars, man. Straight to Mars. Good film. Really, really bad if you look too closely, just like John Carter. But if you don't look too closely, you're going to get a whole lot of fun. And if you're like me, a hell of a lot of laughs at the 80s.
I say that Richard actually, when we were doing the John Carter comic book on the other show, I was actually saying that Total Recall really hasn't aged well.
No, it really hasn't.
No, it hasn't really aged well at all. Richard, what's your number five?
I sort of did this list backwards. I looked at my favorite planets and then picked the films that way. So I went with Arrakis from Dune to start with.
Okay, nice. Fair enough. So does this mean you actually like the Lynch Dune?
I don't mind it. As I said, I did it the other way around. So I went with my favorite planets and the films that were attached to it because I quite like Arrakis. This is a desert planet that has giant worm things and spice.
And spice.
I'm on a horse.
Fair enough. My number five is Outland, the Sean Connery.
Oh, shit, me too. But it's my number four, so I'm going to join in when we come back.
Join in. You're actually next up anyway, so let's do this right now.
Dude, Outland, it's so crap, yet I can't turn away. It's like a train wreck.
I love it. It's a Western in space. It's fantastic. It's high noon.
And it has Sean Connery. And it's got Sean Connery.
And it's got space strippers. What's not to like?
Strippers are a theme tonight.
Dude, it's like, you know what? I don't pitch that movie with any of the it's in space or it's, you know, sort of good for its time, whatever. I just pitch it. It's Sean Connery running around a space station with a shotgun dealing justice out. And everybody's just like, I'd watch that. And I'm like, damn right you would.
I'm in. No, it's a lot of fun. I quite like Outland. All right, Richard, you're number four.
My number four is, the movie is Forbidden Planet. And it's the Forbidden Planet, which is Altair 4.
Fair enough. I really love Forbidden Planet. That was one of my...
I loved it. From here on in, I actually get into movies that I dislike.
Okay. Well, Forbidden Planet was one of my favorites as a kid. That and Jason and the Argonauts.
It's a real classic. And it's... correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's Forbidden Planet that's based loosely on Shakespeare's The Tempest.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yep.
Absolutely. So. Okay, my number four. That's where I'm at too? Yeah, my number four. Sorry, I lost track because you are outlined over
long. I know.
It's okay. My number four is Pitch Black. Because, let's face it, he's a badass.
Fair enough.
Enough said. Okay. Josh, number three.
My number three is Moon. Because Josh, it's on Moon.
Mine's coming up too.
We'll leave that one.
I'm sorry, the Moon's not a planet.
It's outer space. It's a terrestrial. It's an extraterrestrial body.
Okay, fine. It's terrestrial bodies.
It's a not extraterrestrial. That's not what I wanted to say at all, is it?
No, terrestrial body.
Terrestrial body. It's a round orb. It's a round thing that is out in
it's
space.
It's a round thing in space.
Absolutely.
You know what? We make our lists up how we want to, and I put Moon on there. So deal.
Thank you, Josh. Damn straight. All right, we'll come back.
So when I step outside of the rules,
don't make me put you in the corner.
Put me in the corner. I'll bust out of the corner.
Nobody puts Richard in the corner. All right.
I'll mute you on Skype.
Ahem.
Yeah, right. This round, Phil Park.
You completely derailed me. I have no idea where we're up to now.
We're up to my number three, I think. Hang on.
What did we just do?
We haven't done your number three.
We just did. I just said
no. Pitch Black. It goes.
Josh, you just said Moon. Moon.
It's right. Him, Nick.
So, Richard, you're number three.
My number three is Empire Strikes Back. Obvious choice, but it has two of the coolest planets in it. One of them is Hoth, which is not only cool and icy and fun to say, but the other one is the Dagobah.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what?
It's got Yoda on it, and it's got the swamp, and it's got a mystical cave that tells you the future.
Damn straight, and guess what? It's higher on my list as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's higher on my list too.
You'll understand why.
All right. My number three is Moon. Funnily, that.
Not a planet.
Josh, I think we can just say Moon. Awesome. Brilliant.
You know what? I've got one thing to say to you, man. Okay, Richard? Yeah. None of your planets exist, so eat it.
Ooh. Burn.
Yeah. So if we're going to get all technical on the rules, none of your planets exist. So how about you come up with a new list?
Well, that's what you think. But in actual fact, some of these could be Gene Roddenberry's parallel world theory would dictate that some of these worlds could exist. Okay?
I'd like to point out that two of the three planets of my list so far are real, same as Josh's.
It's true, actually. I wanted to put Moon on here so desperately, but I kept it off on my own nerdy technicality. So
okay, fair enough. Anyway, so who's next?
Nerd! Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. I just found the audacity of either of you calling me a nerd.
All right.
We're amongst friends here. You
know? Josh, what's your number two? Let's move this on.
My number two is Star Wars, same as Richard, and same episode too. And my reason was exactly the same, because Hoth is awesome.
Okay, it's funny you say that. Wait till we come up to a little bit further up the list. All right, Richard, you're number two.
My number two is another planet that's not real. From Star Trek 2 and 3, it's Genesis.
Oh, Genesis is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Not only isn't it real, but they created it. It's not even real in their universe. That's cool. All right, my number two is LV-426 from Aliens.
Yes.
Which I just think is awesome fun. So I think everybody in the world has seen Aliens, and if you haven't, go watch it. It's just a lot of fun. All right, number ones. Josh, number one.
My number one is Pitch Black, and I have my reasons too. My reason is that I think this is a criminally underrated film because everybody always remembers Riddick, but essentially if you actually remember the film or have seen it as many times as I had, it's actually more a psychological thriller than anything, and it's sort of playing all of these different personalities against each other to the point where there's bloody conflicts over things, which I think is a really, really smart film. And apart from the end, which becomes kind of about Riddick is in the background for almost the entire film.
Yeah, no, agreed. He's a side character.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's great. And that's why I think it's better than anything they're going to bring out afterwards.
And what's interesting is I actually wrote down on my list the name of the planet that each one of these films is on, except for Pitch Black, because I have no idea what planet it's set on.
I don't think we ever find out, do we?
I'm not sure. I can't remember.
We do, because I was looking at something before that had the name of it.
when he was trying to say the moon wasn't a planet. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, no, actually, no, no, sorry. It's I don't know if we do in Pitch Black. We do for the sequel, but not so much that one. Anyway, yeah,
fair enough. Richard, what's your number one?
My number one is also another planet that doesn't exist, as far as we know. Well, it used to exist, but then it blew up. It was the planet Krypton. It was a doomed planet. But from this planet emerged a capsule, which was sent to Earth and gave us our savior, our Lord.
Would you get on with the movie already?
Superman.
Wow, so
come on, I'm serious. Do you think that anybody watching the show didn't know that one?
No, I knew what it was, but I just wanted him to say it because all I want to say is only the first, 10 minutes of the film is set on Krypton?
Yeah, but they reference it all the time, and it comes, you know, it's all in place. Like,
I'm just Krypton's hassling you because you're hassling us for Moon.
Fuck you, it's not a planet.
Neither is Krypton. All right, my number one, funnily enough, is The Empire Strikes Back as well. And I actually wrote on my list...
That's not a planet.
I actually wrote Empire Strikes Back - Hoth sequence. Yeah. Hoth is awesome.
We all know Hoth is the best.
So, we could also put Dagobah, we could also put Bespin, but let's face it, Hoth is the bomb.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's where we got walkers, man.
Yeah. That was where it all started. Where they really upped the stakes in that film, and they started showing us all of that wonderful blockbuster glory. It's like, you want awesome? Let's have giant walking like animals.
Yeah. You've got walkers. You've got stormtroopers dressed as Klansmen. You've got things called probe droids, which is just awesome. You've got Tauntauns who smell better. And I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
Yeah, you know.
You've got some monsters who live in caves who just, you know, growl at you when you chop their arms
off. You've got a floating city.
Well, we're just talking about Hoth here.
No, I'm talking about the whole film. We got everything in this thing, you know.
Oh yeah, but just Hoth alone.
Oh, Hoth alone.
Talking about the first 20 minutes, we've got awesome stuff.
I want a pet Wampa.
I want a Wampa.
I think Wampas are cool. Except I want
Willy. It'd be Willy Wampa.
Oh, dude, that's great.
Except I want one with both arms. We got to get them. You got to get them pre-Jedi.
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's get ourselves out. I think that's a show. I think we're pretty much done. Oh no, wait! I have one more thing. There's always one more thing. We have a little bit of feedback here.
We've read that out.
No. We got another one. This is for Josh.
Oh, God. What did I do now?
No. This is from our friend Chris from Bris Vegas.
Oh, hey, cool.
He actually writes, "Hi, guys. Haven't written to you in a while, but I have yet another horror film recommendation for Josh."
Ooh.
He says, "Josh, absolutely, positively, I'm not even going to try and say that word. I'm too tired to say it. Unequivocally. Thank you. My God, my mouth won't work. And urgently needs to check out an extremely low-budget horror movie called Absentia, depending on where you're from."
Okay, I have written it down on my list because I was given another film to watch.
And he says the film was made on a pittance, some $70,000, with amateur actors on digital video, and it is simply one of the finest horror/thrillers I've seen.
All right, cool. Dude, well, you know, I always take note of what you say, so I've written it down.
He actually answers that as well. He says, "I know Josh kind of ignores my suggestions."
Do not. I watched Bereavement, and I even commented it on the show, dude.
And he says, "I'm guessing he hasn't even gotten around to seeing Bereavement." Yeah, you have.
And reviewed it on the show.
But I'm putting this out there. Absentia is one of the finest horror films ever made. Chris from Bris Vegas. Okay, Chris, he will look for it.
Damn right, I will.
Absolutely.
Tell me I don't look up your film. I look up a lot more films if more people did it.
All right, that's it. That's a show, guys.
Seriously, I really need to pee, so can we wrap this up?
Josh, where can people find out more about you on the internet?
Oh, on the internet, I don't know. Raw DLC, I guess, and there's also probably some Facebook stuff if you guys are nice enough to write in why you're actually adding me.
I had 3 people add me this week. I have no idea who they are. But one of them was pretty, so I just said, okay. And
those are the ones that are going to get you, Dave.
I know. I have no idea. It's probably some spam, but I'll probably start getting weird mail. Anyway, Richard, where can people find out more about you?
TheRealBits.com. You could start there. That's the RWLBits.com. Or you could go to Twitter at DVDBits.
Fair.
Either are fine.
Either are fine? You sure?
I prefer TheRealBits.com because then I get hits and then I get advertising money off that.
Really? Everybody go find him on Twitter. All right. You can find out more about me by going to geekactually.com, the host of this show. Obviously, from there, you'll find a follow me link. You'll find or follow us. Actually, it's got all of Josh's stuff as well. And you'll be able to find out more about us. If you agree or disagree with anything that we've actually talked about on this show, send your feedback to feedback at filmactually.com. Almost got that wrong again. I know. It'll get to me anyway if you do it the other way as well, but this way at least it organizes it in the right place. Or you can leave us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167. I did that off the top of my head, so I hope it's right. And if you are outside of the country, don't want to make a long distance call, that is a Sydney number, of course, you can use our Skype ID, geekactually, all one word. If your voicemails are under a minute and on topic, we will actually play them on the show because it's always good to hear your voices. Our closing music. I have no idea what music I'm going to finish the show with. I'll see if I can find the soundtrack to John Carter from Mars. If I can find that, we'll use that. If not, it may be a little bit of Total Recall. That's Mars. Mars is always good. All right.
Get your ass to Mars.
Get your ass to Mars. It's always good fun. So, that's a show. Thank you very much. We will be back again next week. What's the movie next week, guys? Does anybody remember?
Oh, who cares? Yeah, no, seriously, I actually don't know.
Oh, it's Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
Oh, wow.
All right.
That should be fun.
this is going to be an experience.
Absolutely. Everybody go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we will all see you next week. Bye, everyone.
Take care.
Bye.